Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
It's the Brad Sessmatt Show on Sports 360 AZ and AZ Central Sports. My name is Jared Cohen. That's Greg Esposito. You can now hear us weekly on the Dry Heat Check podcast. That's something that we do each and every week on Sports360AZ.com. But now we're in for the Brad Sessmatt Show. Espo, how you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing well. We've got a lot of good stuff coming up on the show. Week one of the NFL season is coming up. Drake wears a Devin Booker jersey. And we've got Pedro Gomez, who joins us each and every week after what's been just a brutal stretch for who is supposed to be the top two pitchers in the Diamondbacks rotation the last 2 days against the hated LA Dodgers. But let's get things started. Get some things started. Cardinals versus Patriots this weekend, Espo. So there's a lot of hype. There's a lot of hype around this Cardinals team, and now we get to see it come to fruition in week one on a national stage.
Well, look, I'll be honest. I'm quite frankly worried about this team. Now, you're not going to hear that from a lot of people. We are currently, let me put it this way. I watch Bachelor in Paradise with my wife and the whole Bachelor,
it's embarrassing,
Bachelorette series.
Can't believe you.
You can take my man card, but that's fine. I'm going to tie it together to sports, I promise.
We'll get there. One day I'll tell you the story of why I owe the Bachelor, though. Because of The Bachelor, I have my wife today.
Oh, well, we'll have to talk about that at some point.
One day.
This probably not the appropriate time.
No.
Can I get back to what I was saying?
No, actually, we'll just keep talking about The Bachelor.
Well, see, when you watch those shows, they put these people in this truncated timetable to find love, and they just want to convince themselves that everything's great, and in 4 weeks they can find the love of their life, or however long it is, and they ignore everything else. They're just so focused on they want this great thing.
They want to win.
I feel like that's where we are with the Cardinals right now. Everybody so badly wants a winner in this town because it's been so long since we've seen a team actually have a great deal of success outside of the Cardinals last year. Now they just want to see this winner, and they're ignoring what is instinctual as Cardinals fans to believe that things probably won't work out. And in the end, I'm not comfortable as a Cardinals fan being a fan favorite and a Super Bowl favorite. I don't know how to operate like that, because growing up in this town, every time you thought something great was going to happen, you get a Buddy Ryan 8-8 season and then 4-12 and he's gone. Those are the kind of things.
You get the incredible Steve Nash era, which came up with no championships.
Oh, you get the Cardinals crazy Super Bowl run, and then Kurt Warner retires and the wheels fall off. Like, there's just inherently, you come to expect the worst. So it is very counterintuitive right now for me as a Cardinals fan, and to look at this and really think, okay, they're on the cover of Sports Illustrated as a Super Bowl favorite. Some of the national media is picking them to make the Super Bowl or even win the Super Bowl. I'm not sure. I'm not fearful that we're going to get to a point where Carson Palmer looks very much like Jake Delhomme, where he is a top-flight quarterback, has an awful playoff appearance, and then the wheels completely fall off. I did not see anything in the preseason, and yes, we said, don't worry about preseason.
Yeah,
you
got to
prove
it
in regular season.
Yeah.
But I did not see anything in preseason to make me feel overly comfortable about Carson Palmer at this point. That worries me. That worries me immensely. Now, if they come out and they blow the doors off the Patriots this weekend, it eases some of those fears. But I am always going to be uncomfortable sitting in the catbird seat as an Arizona Cardinals fan, because you're one injury away or one awful stretch of games away from being a complete and utter disappointment.
Now, it's interesting because I'll just throw this in there. Yesterday was my birthday, so we'll go in there. So I get
you're
all
just
these
taking these weird tangents on the show.
I know,
again.
Right? All these weird tangents. But there's a method to my madness.
Sure.
I have a lot of family in Chicago. So I was called by my cousin and her husband, and we were just talking football. You know, we were joking around that Robbie Gould got cut and on the Bears and this and that. And then my cousin's husband says to me, "Man, people out there in Arizona sure are hyping up the Cardinals this year." Because he went to ASU, so mm-hmm. he knows Arizona well, even though he lives in Chicago. And he was kind of in a backwards way reminding me that it's still the Cardinals. Nationally, people still think this is the Cardinals. but just the hype that people are talking about around here and the expectations, it's kind of frightening because only two things can happen here. There's no in between. Either you have an unbelievable run or it's unbelievable disappointment. And
so you're saying it's all or nothing.
It's all or nothing. And the odds are normally that because of the percentages that it's going to end up in disappointment. So hey, I think I really encourage Cardinals fans to just enjoy the ride. It's a fun team. It's a great coach. A lot of great personalities. Don't get too caught up in the run and what could be as a result of the season. Just enjoy the season and let it play out. I know that's hard to say and it's hard to actually live, but I urge you to not be thinking Super Bowl going into week one. Think about week one and take it one step at a time and maybe you'll enjoy it.
I'll play the pessimist. In your mind, prepare for the worst, but be ready to be pleasantly surprised. That's just, as a Cardinals fan, that's the way I've always protected
myself.
That's
what history says it should be.
And I'm prepared for 7-9. And if that happens, okay, that I'm prepared for it. I'm hoping for, 14-2.
Espo, Bill Belichick's coming to town. One of the best all-time coaches in any sport.
The hoodie master.
Yes, so it should be fun to watch the chess match between him and Bruce Arians. So I pose the question, which we like to do. Top three movies/TV coaches.
Are we going to alternate?
We'll alternate.
Okay. My number three is Lou Brown from Major League. All right. He motivated a group of basically losers, guys that in the movie they questioned, is that guy even alive to bring in? He coached them to success. Ultimate success. He was fantastic and he was funny. He's what you want from a coach. Lou Brown from Major League is number three on my list.
Number three for me, John Candy, coaching the Jamaican bobsledding team to potential medal if they didn't crash in the Olympics. Unbelievable. Bunch of sprinters who'd never been around snow. Unbelievable coaching job.
And you got to love John Candy. Number two for me, Chubbs from Happy Gilmore. He took an angry hockey player and turned him into a dominant force in the PGA, all right? We're talking Happy Gilmore was Tiger-esque
Chubbs,
at that time.
He took his hand.
It was a one-handed golfer, then an alligator took his hand, and he motivated Adam Sandler, a.k.a. Happy Gilmore, to play well.
I'm going to go Denzel Washington. Remember the Titans. He took a team of that was there was segregation all over Virginia. He took a team. He could not lose one game or else he would have been fired. He had a perfect season, plus tragedies occurred, and he was an unbelievable catalyst for a community that needed to be reunited. I'm going with the guys that are based on real stories here, not just made-up fictional characters.
I really wanted to go with Will Ferrell's character from Semi-Pro as my number one, but I had to go with a serious choice here. Coach Herman, Denzel Washington from Remember the Titans. Not only did he defeat racism, but he was able to concentrate as a head coach with Ryan Gosling on his team.
Right?
So he's number one.
And my number one is got to be Coach Taylor from Friday Night Lights. He went to three state championships in 4 years in Texas for football. Not to mention he took a team that was off the grid and had to restart a team in the tough area of Dillon, Texas, and turned them in 1 year into a state championship-winning team. Coach Taylor, Friday Night Lights, that's my number one coach.
See, I always wanted to see him and John Voight's coach from Varsity Blues, their teams face off in the ultimate fictional Texas championship
game. That would be a good one. And plus, not to mention, he had players showing up at his door at 10 o'clock at night and had the daughter of a high school kid drama. One of them was dating his quarterback, so it's
whipped cream bikinis. There's all sorts of weird stuff going on.
Absolutely. So coming up next, we're gonna talk. There's some young guys in town. There's a lot to be excited about for the Cardinals and the Suns. But do we need to pump the brakes a little bit? That's what's coming up next on the Brad Sesmat Show. That's Greg Esposito. I'm Jared Cohen, filling in for Brad Sesmat on Sports 360 AZ and AZ Central Sports. It's the Brad Sesmat Show on Sports 360 AZ and AZ Central Sports. That's Greg Esposito. I'm Jared Cohen. I still can't get over the fact that Chubbs got a mention on this show today from Happy Gilmore. That just made the whole show. I mean, it's all downhill from here, I guess.
That's what I'm here for, Jared, is Chubbs references. Anything from the 90s, I've got you covered.
So switching gears away from football, Devin Booker is in the news, but in a roundabout fashion. Drake is in town. His concert, U.S. Airways Center. I guess Talking Stick Resort Arena.
Get it right.
Gosh, I can't. It's had like five different names in my lifetime.
Put $5 in the jar. You got it wrong.
All right. What is this $5 saving up for?
Every time you screw up, we're going to put $5 in the jar, and then I'm going to buy myself something nice.
Oh, okay. Okay, sounds good. That works. So Drake comes out wearing Devin Booker's jersey, and my favorite Suns jersey currently right now, mind you. The black one with the white outline and black writing. It's a good-looking jersey. And Drake comes out rocking the Devin Booker jersey in front of all the fans.
You want a fun fact about that jersey?
Let's hear it.
I actually named it. It's called the Civic Pride jersey, hashtag humblebrag.
Humblebrag, okay. They see y'all pulling out the stops with the jersey naming. So anyways, it's pretty cool that in a time where it's all about the Cardinals lately and the hype around the Diamondbacks and the Suns just can't seem to catch a break, the Drake comes out in a Suns uniform, which I think was a nice score for the Suns organization and their knight in shining armor, Devin Booker, getting some love like that.
Well, look, it's the Kentucky connection because Drake is a big Kentucky fan.
Sure he is.
There's like 40 million teams that Drake's a big fan of, but Kentucky's one of those 40 million. And so we knew that there was going to be some kind of shout out to the Kentucky connection here in Phoenix, all the guards from Kentucky. I was surprised that it was a Devin Booker jersey. I didn't know where we were going to go with it. But you got to wonder, are the other Kentucky guys feeling a little slighted?
Is Eric Bledsoe,
Brandon Knight, Tyler Ulis, Archie Goodwin, are they feeling a little slighted that Devin Booker got the Drake jersey? Now, they all got a shout-out from Drake at the concert. Should we explain for the older audience who Drake is? No,
please.
We'll leave it alone. Brad, we'll let Brad explain to people.
It's a younger demographic show today.
So I wonder, is there any contention there? But there are some concerns. I'm starting to wonder, is there a little too much hype for Book with this? We know that he is very beloved by Suns fans because they're looking for anything to latch on to after a rough six-year stretch, but is too much coming too soon for him?
Yeah, so that raises the question of the segment, Espo, is we have Devin Booker, who right now looks like the knight in shining armor for the Phoenix Suns, the exact guy they needed at the exact time. Good-looking, great player, great personality, coming out to Larry Fitzgerald's supper club last week in a BMW in a fresh suit.
Good looks and fresh suits are what scouts look for in NBA players.
And then it's basketball skills. And then there's also David Johnson. There's young Devin Booker, and now there's David Johnson, who got so much attention in All or Nothing, who had a great back end of last season, who is being pegged as one of the top picks in fantasy football drafts. And every time you pull up Yahoo Fantasy, there he is in the home screen. I think I've seen five or six different pictures with David Johnson pertaining to certain articles in the last 3 or 4 weeks. I know you don't like talking fantasy sports on this, Espo, but we posed the question, David Johnson and Devin Booker, rightfully so, getting a lot of attention, but is the hype getting too much too early with these two?
For me, no, because everything they did in their rookie seasons was deserving of it. It's not like these guys were mediocre at best in their rookie seasons and the PR machine is trying to pump them up. In Devin Booker's case, I feel like he's a guy that can more than handle being the center of attention, has the personality for it, is able to handle the media, is great like that. David Johnson on the other end of the spectrum in terms of he's not the big, huge personality like Devin Booker is, but he's the kind of guy in that Larry Fitzgerald vein that has those great stories about him and his fiance and now his wife, who they're having a kid, and there's just this all this feel-good, good guy vibe.
Well, fact that he was he spent time in dorms when he was at Northern Iowa fixing up the dorms and with his tool belt and doing that in the off season as a job in between school years. Like, there's that story leading into him all of a sudden being an NFL running back. So,
and they both just have this different pedigree, but both lend themselves to being stars. Devin Booker is just that big personality, that big smile. Went to Kentucky, was on the big stage from the word go. David Johnson comes from the small school, is the every guy. Is quiet, has that Larry Fitzgerald type smile. I don't think it's too much too soon. Now, when we talk, when we have David Johnson's position coach and All or Nothing talking about Hall of Fame, maybe that's a little much. I don't think you can say that he's a Hall of Famer based on one game or one season, but he has an immense amount of potential. So does Devin Booker. And I have no problem lifting them up and saying, hey, look, this is the potential. This is where everybody expects you. Now live up to it. And that's the key to any superstar, is being able to handle that and live up to the hype.
Absolutely. And when you look at Devin Booker and David Johnson, at least at this point, David Johnson is on a team full of personalities that's ready to win now. And so he can kind of get lost in the shuffle so that all the spotlight isn't just on him. So much spotlight is on Carson Palmer and Bruce Arians and Larry Fitzgerald and Michael Floyd and Calais Campbell and Chandler Jones and Tyrann Mathieu and Patrick Peterson. There's so many names. Granted, it's a bigger roster,
yeah,
but it's a great roster with a lot of personalities. When you have Devin Booker, you know, there is Eric Bledsoe, there is Tyson Chandler, there is Brandon Knight, but at the same time, he is the one that is the hope. You know, you look at the other guys on the team, and they have been in the league for a little bit, and they've been kind of the consistency with the Suns team that just hasn't made the playoffs in how many years now? Devin Booker,
it's six.
Not that we're keeping track or anything. Devin Booker is the potential for change and the potential for the light at the end of the tunnel. And if he struggles, I feel like there will be a lot. It'll be a lot harder on him in a sophomore campaign than it would be for David Johnson if he does. Plus, Devin Booker doesn't have the depth behind him, so that if he struggles or gets hurt or isn't the hype that's around him off the bat, there isn't someone like a Chris Johnson and Andre Ellington backing him up to pick up the slack, and it doesn't result in losses with him not being out in the action. So I think there's a lot on Devin Booker right now. There is a lot of attention, a lot of hype, and I think if there's anyone fit to handle it based on talking to him personally, that he is the one that's equipped to do it. He just has that it factor about him. You could tell it based on just standing in his vicinity. You could just tell. But there's a lot more on him. And I do kind of worry about the hype because, like we talked about already, in this town, when there's a lot of hype on anything, it normally leads to disappointment. That's all we know. You know, if there was results of that not happening, then that's fine. You could even look at the college ranks. ASU, man, they had back-to-back 10-win seasons, and they had the hype going into last season with national championship hopes and the roster to back, or the schedule that could back that up, and they fall flat on their face. U of A in basketball can't get past the Elite Eight despite the incredible rosters that Sean Miller has had. More often than not, there has been disappointment around hype. So I worry for these two having so much hype around them, and hopefully they could buck the trend a little bit.
Well, look, the odds are one of them is likely going to fail. But you bring up Devin Booker. I think he's the best thing that could have happened to Eric Bledsoe, Brandon Knight, and the Suns rookie class this year, because the attention's on him. So now Eric Bledsoe, Brandon Knight, they can just go and be themselves and operate and play their game, which in the past, especially last year, there was immense amount of pressure on those two guys to be the stars, to get everything done, and I think that affected them as much as anything. Then you bring in rookies Dragan Bender, Marquese Chriss. There's not as much expectation on those two lottery picks because most of it is being channeled to Devin Booker, and that's before we even talk about T.J. Warren and Alex Len. And I think T.J. Warren's the forgotten guy. I think he's going to come in and have a huge season. And the one thing is, fans are going to be disappointed in Devin Booker this season because he's not going to score as many points as he did last year because his usage rate isn't going to be as much. They're going to have more scoring options. He's going to be more efficient, though. And I think that's where fans need to look. Is his efficiency good? Is he scoring at a high percentage when he does get his shots and shooting better from three? Point total isn't going to be what we should judge Devin Booker by.
That's Greg Esposito. I'm Jared Cohen, filling in for Brad Sessmann on the show today. Coming up next, our ESPN MLB insider, Pedro Gomez, will join us for our weekly segment here on AZ Central Sports and Sports 360 AZ.
It's time to talk Arizona Diamondbacks and Major League Baseball with ESPN insider Pedro Gomez. Here's Brad Sessmann.
Jared Cohen and Greg Esposito filling in for Brad Sessmat today on the Brad Sessmat Show on Sports 360 AZ and AZ Central Sports. It's been a long, frustrating summer if you're a Diamondbacks fan, but what's made it a little bit more enjoyable, I think a lot more enjoyable, is that we get Pedro Gomez to join us every week to talk Major League Baseball. And Pedro, thanks again for joining us once again. How's everything in your life?
Everything good. I'm up here in Bristol doing some studio shows for a few days. So, but otherwise, everything is great, including being in Bristol.
That's good. That's good. I like that. I like that, Pedro. So let's get started. So the guys that were supposed to be the top of the Diamondbacks rotation come in and they pitch against the hated LA Dodgers in Dodger Stadium, and they both just absolutely get shelled. Now, what I'd like to talk to you about is, so Shelby Miller pitches last night. He looked pretty good in San Francisco. He looked back to his old ways, at least this season, against the Dodgers. But from watching Shelby Miller before the AAA stint where he was sent down to the last two starts, is there really any differences on what he's doing, or is this the same guy dealing with the same struggles?
Yeah, you know what? I've talked to so many people, scouts, even other players about him. The consensus is that it is not physical, it is mental. And he is, you know, he came here to Arizona with so many expectations. You know, it was a big trade. The Diamondbacks gave up a lot. And the whole thing was, okay, they're going to stick him at number two right behind Zach Greinke. That's a great 1-2 punch. You look at other clubs that have a 1-2 punch. Look no further than the Dodgers the last 3 years with Kershaw and Greinke. So, you know, you've got one of those halves now anchoring the D-back bullpen, or the D-back rotation. And you've got Shelby Miller, who pitched pretty well for the St. Louis Cardinals just a few years ago and is still young. So, yeah, of course, the belief was this is going to be great. But there's a lot of expectations that come with being that guy that was traded for and given up so much to the Atlanta Braves, and the expectations of, look, Greinke's going to be the one, you're going to be the two, and we're going to roll. And, you know, that's the belief among a lot of people in baseball, that the expectations kind of just weighed him down and he just never could recover.
Well, speaking of expectations weighing down some people, last week on the show you mentioned that Dave Stewart likely going to get another chance at this thing next year with the Diamondbacks. I was listening, and in my head, the only question I could come up with is, why is that the chance? Will there be a fall guy at all because of what's happened this year with the Diamondbacks?
I think the why, by the way, is because you just cannot continue to have a revolving door here. Mm-hmm. Now, the downside is that if things don't turn around, you've wasted a year where somebody could be in there and starting to move things around. And you know what? You look at other organizations that were really down, and they tend to turn things around within 4 or 5 years. You know, the Houston Astros were the worst team in baseball for so long. And, you know, they drafted correctly. They got the young – they were drafting very high, but they got the players that they really wanted. And now you see a guy like Alex Bregman, who was the number two overall pick just a couple of years ago, and look what he is doing for the Astros. Actually, it was a year and a half ago that he was the number two overall pick for the Astros. You know, you see all these high draft picks performing. You saw it with the Kansas City Royals over the last few years when they were one of the worst clubs in baseball for a stretch, but they drafted correctly. You see it with the Chicago Cubs.
Yeah, I was going to say the
who
Cubs.
I think a lot of people forgot lost 90-plus games for 3-4 years in a row. So, you know, these are clubs that were absolutely the worst or among the worst in baseball and turned it around within a 4 to 5 year span because they drafted correctly. Diamondbacks took a huge chance. They had the number one pick last year. They're going to have another high pick coming up next year. They've had some high picks. But, boy, you know, Dansby Swanson, gone. Archie Bradley, who was a high pick a few years ago, you know, they're still waiting for him to pan out. I mean, there's – you've got to at some point look and say, are we making the right decisions when we draft somebody? And that's a big, big part of trying to get on track. And, you know, like I said, there's example after example of organizations that were not very good, but they drafted correctly, and now look where they are.
Well, the teams you brought up all seemed to have a distinct plan that they were going to follow, and a lot of it involved some of that new age thinking in terms of analytics. The Diamondbacks have what it takes to kind of make that shift and look at the game the way a lot of these teams are now.
The belief in baseball is that they are not as advanced as they should be or need to be. Now, no one is, believe me, no one's going to try to tell them, hey, you guys need to step up your game. You know, they need to look around and see what other organizations are doing and why they're being so successful and why they're able to turn things around so quickly. You know, another issue is that you've got, you know, maybe an owner who is not as patient as other owners have been. And, you know, that can also lead to some issues. Because if he's got an itchy trigger, you know, that's going to make the people in charge try to do things really quickly. And I think in retrospect, we may look back at this trade with Shelby Miller and say, man, if they had just hung on to Dansby Swanson and continued down the road of trying to build and develop, who knows where the Diamondbacks would be. But, you know, this is the type of trade that could set back an organization 3, 4, 5 years.
Yeah, you're right, Pedro. And you think about all the first round draft picks that they've traded the last few years. I mean, Braden Shipley's the only one left. They traded Tuki Toussaint also. They traded Aaron Blair also in that Dansby Swanson trade. So it's just crazy to think about the first-round picks that are not here with the organization anymore. But this is MLB Insider. Pedro Gomez joins us each and every week. That's Greg Esposito. I'm Jared Cohen. Hey, let's be positive, Pedro. What is a guy, is there a player or a couple players on this Diamondbacks team that around baseball people are like, you know what, this guy is going to be a star or a stud or really a promising fixture for this organization going forward as a result of this season?
Well, I mean, A.J. Pollock was definitely on that track, and then he got hurt. You know, he's only been back for a few days. Jake Lamb certainly falls into that category. Baseball people love Jake Lamb. They love what he's done. They think he is a very, very good player. You know, I hate or hesitate to put Gene Segura in that deal because in this category because Segura has already been around for a few years. But Segura has really turned things around this season and opened eyes. But I would say that if you had to pick one guy, Jake Lamb is probably that guy.
Clayton Kershaw coming back this weekend to pitch for the Dodgers. I heard that you're actually going to be out there at the game. What should fans of the NL West kind of expect with him coming back?
Well, if you're a Dodger fan, you'd like him to get 4 or 5 innings of scoreless baseball. I don't think he's going to pitch probably more than 4 or 5 innings. He's going to be on a pitch count because, let's face it, he's had one rehab assignment, which was a few days ago at Rancho Cucamonga. And before that, he threw one bullpen session, and then he basically was out for 2 months. So think of a pitcher coming back or starting spring training, let's say. You know, your first time out in spring training, you might throw 3 or 4 innings, and that's, or your second or third time out, I should say, you might throw 3 or 4 innings, and that's probably about what to expect. But if you're a Dodger fan, you should expect by the end of September, he's ready to go and be able to go 7 innings at least. And that's very, very bright for the Dodgers, who are, you know, 4 games up. They're watching the Giants just circle the bowl almost
yeah.
since the All-Star game. If you're a Dodger fan, you should be very excited. In the NL West, I think that, you know, he's the best pitcher in baseball. And, yeah, he's had to miss 2 months. But, you know, it's tough when you've missed 2 full months, 2+ months, and now you're coming back. So, you know, to expect him to be in midseason form is not fair. But usually when Clayton Kershaw starts a season, he's already in midseason form.
It's definitely incredible that the Dodgers, despite all of that and the amount of injuries they've had, they're still sitting there up in first place. It's Pedro Gomez joining us. Our MLB Insider joins us each and every week. That's Greg Esposito. I'm Jared Cohen filling in for Brad today. Pedro, let's switch gears because you're very familiar with the sports scene here in the Valley. And a topic that we talked about off the top for today's show was around the Arizona Cardinals and the amount of hype that's around them, not just locally, but nationally. And both of us are born and raised here, and we're very reluctant to buy into this hype because we've seen nothing but disappointment as long as we've been around sports here locally. So just curious your outlook on the Arizona Cardinals as they embark on their 2016 season this weekend, and if the hype is warranted or, based on your experience out here, people should be pumping the brakes also.
Well, at some point it's going to happen. And here's how I'll put it. I was in the green room this morning here in Bristol with Jeff Saturday, Booger McFarlane, and Tim Hasselbeck. And I actually asked them about the Cardinals. And they all three were unanimous about that's probably the best defense And I know Bronco fans are going to be upset, but they said that is the best defense, at least in the NFC and probably in the NFL. Oh. Adding Kim Dichie, adding Chandler Jones to go with Calais Campbell, they, and you know, these are people that really know football. They all played the game at the highest level in the NFL. And they are really high on the Arizona Cardinals this year. So I'll take my cues from guys that really, really know the sport, like those three. And they were gushing over the possibilities of what the Cards can do this year.
You know, that should make me feel better. And yet, having been a fan throughout the 90s, I still have this pit in my stomach that it may not turn out all right.
Well, that comes from, hey, man, I've lived in the Valley almost 20 years, so I know exactly. You know, we've all witnessed that horrible Cardinals brand that was there for so long. But I will say this, over the last 5-7 years, the Arizona Cardinals are no longer that. They're not. Yeah. It's hard for us who have lived in the Valley so long to erase that doormat mentality.
Yeah.
But nationally, they are absolutely anything but a doormat.
Pedro, thank you so much for your time. As always, we appreciate it. And we'll catch up again soon, okay?
Okay, guys.
That's Pedro Gomez, MLB insider from ESPN. He joins us each and every week on the Brad Sesmatch Show, and always very good stuff, very well tapped in and very interesting, and we always enjoy talking to Pedro. Coming up next, we'll do a little segment that we normally do on the dry heat check called the Airing of Grievances.
I'm ready, are
Espo you? Will channel his inner Costanza as we'll talk about some stuff that's really bothering him to close out this show. It's Greg Esposito. I'm Jared Cohen, filling in for Brad Sesmatt on Sports 360 AZ and AZ Central Sports. Sports 360 AZ, AZ Central Sports. It's the Brad Sesmatt Show, 5 days a week. It's Greg Esposito, Jared Cohen, filling in for Brad Sesmatt. Special thanks again to Pedro Gomez for joining us last segment. He is the best. Always great stuff and always a lot of fun to talk to Pedro. The airing of grievances, Espo. It's one of your favorite things to do each and every week on the show. And there are some things that are really, you know, trying to bring out your inner Costanza here over the last week with things that are around Arizona sports.
Well, look, and I could have had 14 this week, but
well,
I'm
you could have 90
stay.
Every week. There's always something. You
I think
know?
I'm
going to
stay
limit you.
I think I'm going to stay to two. We might sneak into third. I don't know. We'll see
well,
how
you
it,
did two and a half
we'll
a couple
goes.
Weeks ago.
See how it goes. But the first one I want to talk about is the fact the Phoenix Suns have brought purple back. It is back on the court around the rim. Last year they had made the lines on the court purple, but it is fully back for the first time
so
in a long
you,
time.
So and, to look, you, is it like bringing sexy back?
Don't make bad Justin. Do not sully the good name of Justin Timberlake with whatever that bad joke just was. That may be my next airing of grievance,
okay.
Is how bad your jokes are on this show, Jared. But let me get back. I don't want to stray too far from this before I lose my train of thought.
Gone off the rails.
Look, I'm not mad that they brought purple back. I'm actually excited that they did. What I'm mad about is why did it take so damn long? The last time that purple was around the court, around the outside of the court, was 1999-2000. Okay, we're talking backcourt 2000 days when Penny Hardaway and Jason Kidd were the backcourt of this team. It was the last time that purple was a prominent color on the court.
And we referenced about 3 or 4 shows ago how that was arguably one of the most disappointing seasons in Arizona sports history. So
certainly was, and it just frustrates me. I was on the inside. For 5 years, I fought this battle from the inside, and it's nice to finally see that I decide to leave the organization and they actually make a change.
Maybe it's an honor of you, Espo.
No, it is not. There's no honoring my time there, but I just don't understand why for so long purple was kind of pushed aside from the color palette of the Phoenix Suns. It is such an important part of the history of the Phoenix Suns. It is interwoven in the fabric and the story of this team. I remember writing a note to the Phoenix Suns and Jerry Colangelo when I was a kid asking, okay, why purple and orange? Why are those the colors of a team named the Suns and in Phoenix? And the simple answer was...
He wrote back
he
to
He wrote
you?
Back. And
How
the
awesome
simple
is that?
Answer was... Have you ever looked at a sunset in Phoenix? The predominant colors are purple and orange, and that's why the Phoenix Suns colors are purple and orange. And to me, that's always been, when I see those sunsets, what I think. And the fact that orange moved to the side for black and gray and all these different things over the last decade and a half, two decades, was frustrating to me. And I am glad that they are fully embracing the history of this team and welcoming purple back fully. I hope home uniforms are the next step where we get to see purple on there. The fans have always wanted it. That was the thing I heard the most when I was running Sun social accounts was, where is the purple? Why has purple gone away? And I am excited that it's finally back, but I'm frustrated that it took so damn long to become part of this.
And forever it was known as the Purple Palace.
Yeah.
And it was called the Purple Palace because there was purple everywhere. There were purple seats. There was purple on the court. There were purple in the uniforms. And you're right. It's gotten away from that a little bit.
Yeah, and I'm glad that finally that heritage is being brought back. And in time for the 50th season is next year. So hopefully there's a lot of embracing.
I remember the 25th season was the finals team.
92-93, which will be 25 years.
25 years since that team? That should be a celebration in itself.
Yeah, hopefully it will be.
So, Greg, you have another area.
I do.
You have two.
I'm an angry guy.
I guess you have three that you wanted to mention now because of me. But
I got a lot of problems with you people.
Please,
clearly. And you're going to hear about it.
Just an angry guy you are.
Yesterday, DeAndre Ayton announced that he was going to be coming to the University of Arizona. The number
one Wildcat graduate, I have no idea why you're upset, but continue.
Okay, number one prospect in all of college basketball, a guy that's been compared to Kevin Garnett, I think, is great that he's coming to the University of Arizona. My problem is the way that we let these high school kids announce where they're going to college. He did this live on SportsCenter yesterday, announced where he was going. Do we realize how ridiculous this is? This kid is doing this on SportsCenter, and we lambasted LeBron James for doing the same thing. LeBron James did the decision on ESPN. He sat in front of a camera and spent time announcing where he was going to play, where he was deciding to play, and they made a whole spectacle of it, and it turned him into a complete and utter villain. Yet for some reason, we celebrate teenagers doing the same exact thing on ESPN and other national outlets, announcing where they're going. These kids who all they have going for them really is potential and some outlet ranking them as a five-star recruit. All right? I don't like how we're putting so much attention on these young kids in that way, and a lot of pressure as well.
A lot of
because
pressure.
Because they buy into their own hype. Maybe they don't. I'm not passing judgment on DeAndre Ayton. I don't know what he's going to do, how he's going to do, his mental makeup, but you put a lot of pressure on kids. When you turn them into stars when they're in high school, when you're showing their games on ESPN, at some point, it worries me that it's changing the mentality of these athletes, and it's affecting even pro sports as we go forward as well. And that's before you even get into the one-and-done mentality of college basketball and how it's slowly ruining things. But I don't like how we're letting these teenagers announce this the same way LeBron James did. We kill a grown man for doing it, but we praise a 17-year-old. What is that teaching them when they get into the pros? It makes no sense. It's counterintuitive to me, and I don't understand it.
Well, and then part of it is, you know, it's a me mentality. You know, it's not a team mentality. When you get up in front of a camera and you announce something that you're going to be doing and the schools that you're going to be committing to are in the dark, they have no idea. You know, here's an example. Alex Barcelo, who is another local kid. Ayton plays at Hillcrest Prep School here, and we'll get into that in a second. Alex Barcelo, who also committed to U of A for the 2017 class, who in terms of public schools and AIA-affiliated schools is probably one of the best, if not the best, 2017 prospects in Arizona. He just put out a message on Twitter and called it, and that was the end of it. You know, there's that mentality, and then there's this mentality. But you're right. And a lot of these live broadcasts, too, you will see these kids saying, I am taking my talents to wherever. I don't think Ayton heard that. And Eric Sorensen and I were watching it live, and it was loud in the room, so we couldn't really hear much. But it's the same thing where I've seen on signing day for football, going into college football, kids saying, I'll be taking my talents to blank. And people use that saying as just the most negative connotative thing as a result of what LeBron James said. Yet you have high school kids saying that, and they're supposed to be praised and celebrated. So,
Look, and I am all for these kids getting attention for the immense amount of talent they have and what they're doing.
And the amount of work that it takes. It's not just talent that gets you this far.
No, and choosing a school. I'm fine with that. But I struggle with the fact that they announce it the way they do, but then you look at that, and ESPN's making money off of them the way they're announcing it. That new school's going to make money off them. It's this whole machine that they're buying into this hype. It frustrates me the way that happens.
And one more thing to add to that. Every time I've been covering recruiting now for 5 years. The last three or four, every time you ask a kid about their recruitment, they tell you either they're excited for it to be done, that they didn't like it, that they are overwhelmed. It's because there is so much pressure. Rarely do you hear a kid say, oh, my recruitment was amazing. I had Texas A&M fly me out and show me their incredible facilities, and I got to meet Johnny Manziel, and I got to talk to Christian Kirk, who took me on the visit. You never hear about, it was an unbelievable experience, and I will never forget it. I will always remember the times that I was being recruited and pursued by college football or college basketball or college baseball. You never hear it that way. You only hear it's exhausting, it's overwhelming, the pressure on these kids is ridiculous, and then having a broadcast like that live only adds to that. You never hear a kid say, I loved it. You always hear him say, it was really hard, and I'm glad that it's over with. And it shouldn't be like that, because these are huge decisions for these kids, but they're also extraordinary accomplishments, and there's something that should be celebrated for these kids, not to come with pressure and not to come with negative stances, because it's just unfortunate. You never hear that it's been an amazing experience, and I'm excited that the culmination of this experience of people wanting me to play at their school for their college is coming to an end with a climax of the decision that I'm making. You never hear that.
Well, and when you treat them like superstars, it adds to the pressure of, this is one of the biggest decisions of my life. If I make it wrong, I'm going to screw up my entire future. And that's, like, to your point, that isn't the way this should be. This should be exciting that they're trying to figure out where they're going to spend 1 to 4 years of their life at and enjoy the college experience.
And hopefully for Wildcat fans, DeAndre Ayton remains eligible. I know he was asked on SportsCenter Live if he's going to go play pro overseas instead of going to play for U of A, and his response was that his family and him does not want to forego the opportunity to play in this country for a college basketball team, so he has no plans of not going to Tucson. However, he's playing at a prep school currently. There's always some kind of gray area with prep schools and NCAA eligibility. We saw that with Prime Prep in Dallas, which caused one of the 2016 prize prospects for U of A, Terrence Ferguson, to all of a sudden not go to U of A at the last minute, and now he's playing overseas in Australia with an Under Armour contract. So you worry that these kids that are coming from the prep schools and not the public schools situation, or at least some of these long-standing prep schools like Findlay Prep, Oak Hill, and some of the other ones around the country, you worry about the NCAA eligibility. Is there something that's missing? Is there something that has not worked? Are his grades up to par? Are his requirements from an academic standpoint enough to be able to get him into college? You just worry about that. And this is the first time, this might be the most high-profile recruit U of A has ever landed in the history of the program. And you really hope it doesn't end with sour grapes like it has with Ferguson, with Brandon Jennings a few years back. That's what can happen here. And hopefully for the Wildcats' sake, they're not on the wrong end of it once again.
Well, to keep the pessimistic theme going on, they say things come in threes. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, boy. That's Greg Esposito. I'm Jared Cohen. We're filling in for Brad Sesmat today on the Brad Sesmat Show. Again, special thanks to Pedro Gomez for joining us. Greg, thank you for joining us.
Always a pleasure.
You can check out our podcast each and every week. It's the Dry Heat Check. It's a lot of fun, and we do a lot of the stuff we did today, so hopefully you enjoyed it. I'm Jared Cohen, filling in for Brad Sesmat today. Special thanks to E and Jared behind the glass on Sports 360 AZ and AZ Central Sports.